Well, as you are typing your questions in, let me just ask a couple of questions to Kev while we get somewhere in. Can you say a little bit more about the evidence of Jesus raising from the dead? Someone might be critical and say, did he really rise? What's our basis for believing that?
Yeah, thank you. So it mainly roots back to the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John. You might think, well, that's bias, isn't it? They had an agenda. Yeah, they did have an agenda. They sincerely believed that Jesus had come back to life, and they wanted to persuade you of that agenda. There's nothing like the New Testament and those New Testament Gospels, just in terms of the sheer number of manuscript copies of them, and for how early the first manuscripts are. And that early dating is really, really important, because it means that Luke's Gospel, for example, was floating around the place at a time where the named individuals involved in the story of Jesus' death and resurrection were still alive. Paul makes that point explicitly, actually, in one of his other letters, 1 Corinthians, and says, look, you can go and speak to the witnesses. Some of them have died, but many of them are still alive, and they can attest to you that this is true. So different witnesses at different times. Mass hallucination is not a thing. And historians, as I say, are baffled. You know, PhDs have been written claiming something like, he must have had an evil twin, because there's just, how else do we explain this? These guys genuinely, sincerely changed the world on the basis of a claim that he rose, and you need an explanation for that, really.
Thank you, that's really helpful. Thanks for sending in these questions. Let's try and answer these. I've got them here on my phone as well, and they're coming up on the screen. How should we, as Christians, pray for and think about those loved ones who have died and not accepted Christ? That's so hard, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's got to be the hardest thing, isn't it? I mean, that, you know, so really, sorry if that's part of your story, as it will be for many, many here. I think don't feel guilty for struggling with that is the first thing that I want to say. So that will obviously be something that might be a wrestle with you, but lean into the Lord in that struggle. Ask for his grace to enable you to cope with what is really an uncertain state, because the thing is, we don't know about anyone. And the point of death, you know, if ever there was going to be a moment of weakness where someone cries out to their maker for mercy, surely the moment of dying would be that moment. So you're asking the Lord to help sustain you through, you know, the not knowing. And then I guess things that you'd be thinking about would be remembering that none of us has the right to the gospel. It's a mercy of God for all of us that we believe Jesus. And I think I'd want to say, fix your eyes on Christ a lot, remembering his goodness. And probably speak to others at church. That will be a lot of people's experience. Actually, partly from the positive reason of, you might be the first one in your family who's become a Christian, and not everyone in the family is a Christian. And that will have been the case in Thessalonica as well. So looking forward, and as you think about yourself and other family members, then keep urgently praying for their salvation. But that is the toughest thing.
Yeah, it's really hard. This question asks, how can we get the balance right when supporting grieving Christian friends, both acknowledging how awful death is, but also pointing them to the resurrection hope, because we don't want to just say get over it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure it's a case of getting the balance right as doing both, maybe not necessarily at the same time. So grief will vary so much. We really need to give people the space to grieve and grieve the way they are grieving. And I hope we're a church where, you know, it's all right to cry in church, that lament is actually part of our shared response to God, as well as things like praise and thanks that we corporately lament, and just asking people questions like, what is it, how is it going for you at the moment, what are you finding hard, you know, as you go through the grieving, rather than making assumptions, and then as and when appropriate bringing in the resurrection hope. The thing I would say is, the point to start teaching each other about resurrection hope is not the moment of grief. People can't process anything in the shock of grief. So let's be a church family who teach each other and encourage each other with these words in the normal days, so that we're then equipped for the really tough days.
Thank you so much. This question asks, will everyone before Christ's resurrection go to hell? Was there hope before Jesus?
Yeah, there was hope before Jesus. Yeah, faith is the thing that in Christ phrase that we talked about. Faith is the thing that joins us to Christ. And the New Testament lists this whole track record of people for Abraham and who had faith. They didn't know about Jesus, but they had promises that were going to mature into Jesus, and they latched onto those promises in faith, and that's what saves them.
Thank you. Now, here at the morning service, lots of people have children, and this question asks, how would you explain to children that when someone dies, he or she has gone to heaven? How do you speak to children about death?
Yeah, good question. I mean, sometimes children can cope with that better than adults, is my experience. And just to say it like that and not to sugarcoat it or explain it in any other way. They'll be conceptualizing that in their own way, in their little brains anyway. But, yeah, you know your kids. And I don't think we need to be shy of talking to them about heaven.
Shall we do one more? This person asks, how can I be sure that I am in Christ and will rise with him when the time comes? How can we have assurance that this is definitely us?
Yeah, well, that's, thank you. Well, go back to earlier in 1 Thessalonians, because the first two or three chapters, all Paul is doing actually is assuring them that they really are in Christ. And one of the places that you get that from is the end of chapter 1. They turn to God from idols to serve the living and true God, and to wait for his son, Jesus. That's chapter 1, 9 and 10. So if you're a person who said, you know, I get that, you know, the other stuff is lies, I turn from that, God, I'm sorry for the things in my life that have been against you, and now I turn and it will be a battle for me, but I want to serve you, and I'm waiting for your son from heaven. If that's your basic disposition and you're battling to be that person every day, then you're someone in Christ for sure.